May all beings be happy. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be free from harm. May all beings love life. May all beings awaken. Welcome to another Guke Audio Podcast. I'm D.C. Poobah of Guke Audio and Guke Archives, preserving the legacy of Shunryu Suzuki and those whose paths crossed his, and anything else that comes to mind. I pray that you and yours are safe and comfortable, free from economic hardship, and able to get out and do whatever it is you want within the limitations of the universal precept of do as little harm as possible. So we have a guest today. It is David Schneider. David was a student of Shunryu Suzuki and later of Richard Baker and then Chogyam Trungpa. He was very active in Trungpa's Shambhala organization. He was head of Shambhala Europe. And he still lives there in Germany. He's been there a long time, and in Köln, which means colony, he told me. I can't remember what the significance of that is, but he sent it to me in an email after listening to this podcast and pointing out that I'd accidentally put up the unfinished product, much to my embarrassment. Anyway, Köln means cologne, means colonia, colony, and it was a designation of the rank of the city in the Roman Empire, which meant it was important and directly under Rome. And then this designation stuck as the name of the city. David's known for writing the biographies of Ethan Dorsey and Philip Whalen, and there's a couple of other books. We talk about them briefly. And he has a new book out, Goods, Short Stories. And it is a Guke Press book, but it's not a Guke Press book, a normal one. It's a Guke Press DE book. It's the German subsidiary of Guke Press. So we talk about that a little too. So he talks about that book and some other books he's got in mind. He tells some stories. And so it's pretty neat. And so after our pause to meditate, we'll get right into it. So when you hear the bell, if you're of such a mind, hit pause. And when you're through meditating or whatever, hit unpause. And we'll be waiting to hit the bell to end the meditation or whatever, and we'll get right into a little chat with David Schneider. So, David.
So, tell
us what you're up to. Huh?
Yeah, I'm in Germany. Has been in a fairly strict COVID lockdown. So at least my state, the state Nordrhein-Westfalen, where Cologne is, we've been having high numbers. So it's been pretty strict here. We've even had a curfew at night. Although that's lightening up now, I hear. So I've been having, you know, mostly domestic living quietly at home, practicing here and taking care of the house, which is a lot of work, cooking and cleaning and entertaining my daughter who comes over about four times a week for a meal and hang period. She's sort of...
And you said she likes your cooking. That's why she said she comes.
she says she likes my cooking. I think it's kind of like... flattery so that I'll do it. And I do it because I love to hear her say she likes my cooking.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's good. That's good.
Yeah. Very smart. And
go on.
Yeah. So, I mean, and then, so beyond, you know, the physical activities of just living a life, I've also been trying to write. And as you know, we did these short stories. But since those, I've been working, I'm continuing to work on shorter things. But the ones I'm working on these days are more what I think of as true stories, whereas the other ones in that book, Goods, are more, at least I think of them as fictional. I mean, there was more chance to kind of elaborate or invent or...
You're working on truth stories now, and you, Goods is falsehood stories.
Well, something like that. I mean, it's on a spectrum. It's on a spectrum, you know.
And, Goods, what's the subtitle?
Short stories. If I were going to say a subtitle to people who would know what this means, I would say Tales of the Practice World, because, you know, that's how I think of it. Not everybody out there would understand that, but I mean, it's like what happens in practice communities, you know, little sort of a comedy of manners, like what it's like to live in communities where most everybody you see is some kind of practitioner, and you move in and out of that world and are marked by being of it and sort of on the borders of it as well. So, yeah, that was what the kind of theme was. And it was sort of like, I thought, you know, I hadn't seen much sort of formal short story writing about that aspect. I mean, there's been some, but I hadn't seen much. And, you know, I thought of like one model, you know, like Isaac Bashevis Singer wrote a lot of short stories about life in the Jewish community of New York.
Mm.
Just as an example, you know, I'm not putting myself in his league or saying I modeled my work on his, but there is a writer sort of telling stories about a scene. And I thought, well, you know, no one's really talked much in a literary way about the Buddhist scene, at least the aspects of it that I knew from the San Francisco Zen Center and then the sort of Shambhala Vajradhatu community. So that's the stories were meant to sort of be illuminations of that, you know, little sort of insights or little visions of what that world might be.
So if somebody wants to get this book, they just go to Amazon.com.
Right.
Right. David Schneider. Yeah. I'd write David Schneider, S-C-H-N-E-I-D-E-R. Goods, colon, short stories. Would that
That's
do
it? Right, or just Goods, I think. And then short stories as a subtitle, yeah.
The word Goods just seems so, it has so much competition.
well,
it'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you right now if it works.
But I kind of wanted it to be, it's, you know, like more than a double entendre, of course. You know, there's many meanings of it. And certainly in Shambhala, and particularly Trungpa Rinpoche's teaching about basic goodness, that's been taken and twisted and used used both intelligently and less so, it seems to me. And they're really stories about people. And I think a lot of the people in the practice world like to think of themselves as good people. And also the sense of like, you know, merchandise.
Mm-hmm.
Or also another thought would be sort of like, you know, the meaning or the inside story, something like that, the goods.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and I don't know if it's hard to find on that basis, but if you put my name and that, it's probably the only one of those.
You know, a lot of searching is, searching is individualized. So I think my experience right now might not
represent
be the same experience somebody yeah. else has. But I'm experimenting. So, you know, I'm very interested in it being a Kindle book because, well, I've read some of the stories because yeah. you sent them to me. They're great.
Thank you.
But I'd like to have the whole book. I don't let people send me things here. Yeah, look, I wrote Goods by itself. I couldn't get anywhere. I wrote Goods, short stories. Now, and bang, it came up right away.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, so there it is. The next, when our friend Alice goes to America and comes back, she'll bring it. Or Katrinka's going in September.
Right.
I'm a really bad reader, so short stories are really good for me.
Well, it seems to me people's attention spans have gotten shorter. Mine has. And
I was born that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they told me when I was in America last time, everybody said, well, you can't publish short stories unless you have a novel.
And I didn't have bullshit.
I didn't have a novel written.
Oh, come on. That's ridiculous. Yeah,
I know, but that's what the writers were all telling me. And actually, the agents were saying that, too. I talked to a few of them. And they all said, well, do you have a novel? And I said, well, no. So I've been working on one of those in the background as well.
Good. Do that. I basically just pay attention to what Michael Katz says. That served me very well.
He knows what he's talking about, that's for sure.
Yeah. Editorial note here. Dogen said, hey, Dogen, founder of Soto Zen, although I don't think he necessarily intended for it to be a sect, but you know, those things happen. Said, should only listen to the criticism from one person. So I try to apply that. I remember that in recording. I said to an engineer I was working with, I said, well, you know, a friend of mine who heard the tape said so-and-so. He said, don't listen to your friends. But I think even more apropos for this point with David, don't listen to a lot of different professional advice on something. You know, choose carefully who you're going to listen to.
While I was trying to work on this longer thing, these other sort of, it occurred to me that, you know, I had these encounters with amazing teachers, and I should get those down while I still can. They are like short stories. Like an encounter is, you know, the core of most of these recent stories that I'm working on, not the ones in Goods. And so there's like a couple of times with Suzuki Roshi and several times with Trungpa Rinpoche and Nakamura Sensei.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's a good one. Tell us about Nakamura Sensei.
Well, this is the story of she used to come out when we had just first gotten Green Gulch.
Well, first say who she is.
Oh, well, she was a tea teacher, national treasurer of Japan. I don't know her lineage of tea, but she was, I believe, you know, like as high as you could get in that. Yeah. Omota Senke. Okay. And she was living at that time with the Bakers in San Francisco and would be exported to Green Gulch once a week so that we could study utai or no chanting with her, which was something she also very kindly agreed to teach us, and being a master of that as well. And so we would have these classes of a Thursday night or something, and then she would have to get back to the city. And one night, I was in bed. I was alone in the Green Gulch Zendo at that point. And someone roused me and said, listen, can you drive Nakamura Sensei back to the city? And so this is the story of my doing that in the what we had there, the green van, as we called it. It was also the van that we used to move compost back and forth between Green Gulch and the city. We would take their garbage and make it into compost at Green Gulch. And so it stunk. And here I have this incredibly elegant national treasure tea lady sitting in the front seat and me in basically in my pajamas driving this stinking van across Marin County and over the Golden Gate Bridge. So it's a little story about that.
Oh, that's what? Tell us.
Well, I mean, the fact is that I didn't realize that she couldn't speak English. And so I was telling her all these things about, you know, Marin County that I had learned. I was pointing out, here's Mount Tam and this and that. And she was very graciously nodding and smiling and making, you know, appropriately appreciative noises back at me. But I finally figured out, you know, we couldn't talk. And then it also occurred to me as I entered, as I got onto the bridge, that, you know, I had really been roused from my sleeping bag. And I just pulled on some fat pants and tied them up and put on a jacket and got in the van. I didn't have a wallet and I didn't have bridge toll.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, well, kind of, except that I didn't have any way to ask Nakamura Sensei if she had any money. Because she didn't understand my English and I didn't know enough Japanese. And I was sure, you know, she had all these elegant kimono and I don't even know the names for all the pieces of clothing she was wearing. But I was sure that somewhere in there was a paper wallet with money in it.
I wouldn't be sure. She didn't have to do anything for herself.
Yeah, well, I couldn't do anything for her either. But then, you know, I pull this stinking van up to the to the toll booth and I roll the window down, you know, and I'm like this skinny, crazy Zen student with not much hair. And the van smells like compost. And in the front seat is this elegant, elderly Japanese woman. And the guy looked at me like, what the fuck, you know? And I explained, I don't have any money, man. And he said, well, you know, he stopped traffic on all the lanes to my right and made me go over to the building and, you know, fill out forms. And it was, you know, and poor Nakamura Sensei, she had to sit in the van while I while I negotiated with the bridge toll people. And it all worked out, but yeah, it was mighty embarrassing.
I understand it. I would know usually if I drove up to the bridge with that money. And I knew what to do. I just run inside and take care of it. And I got to be where I could do it pretty quick. Because I drove over the bridge a lot. And, you know, maybe once every few months that would happen.
This was my maiden time, my only time, actually. My first and only encounter with the bridge toll people.
Yeah.
You know, Nakamura Sensei in tow.
Yeah.
She seemed to forgive. She seemed forgiving about it. So,
yeah.
So little stories like that, you know, and things like when Trungpa Rinpoche came to the Zen Center to see the new Gandhara Buddha, which at that point was down in the Xerox room. It wasn't.
Oh, I want to hear about that.
Yeah, well, there's a little story about that, which is in this the book of things that I'm trying to write now. And so it's like, you know, I had to walk him down there. Baker Roshi was going to show him, but he got this important phone call and asked me to take, he said, would you take Trungpa down to the, I think we called it the Xerox room at that point or the copy room. And so this is the story of walking down that red linoleum hall or whatever the floor material is in Zen Center's front hall. And getting down those stairs and going back underneath the front hall to the copy room and waiting for Baker Roshi to get off the telephone and come down and open the door because it was locked. And I had Trungpa Rinpoche holding onto my arm. And
yeah, just get a key in the office.
Exactly. And what am I going to do? And, you know, it wasn't exactly the same as Nakamura Sensei, but he was not interested in chit chat.
Yeah.
He was. I had tried a little bit of it as we started out, and it was like trying to talk to a, you know, an elephant or something. He wanted to walk, period. He didn't want to chit chat with me, you know.
Yeah. So
I figured.
So
yeah.
What did you get in? Did he see it?
He did. But at that point, you know, Baker Roshi came and opened the door, and he and Trungpa Rinpoche looked at the statue, and it was clear that from their, at least Baker Roshi's body language, that I should now vanish. I had done my duty.
Oh.
The main thing, though, was the stairs. You know, the stairs that go from the first floor down to the densho bell. And
oh, yeah, it's hard for him to walk.
It was impossible, basically, and he...
Oh, they should have brought it up to him. No, they can't do that.
What he did was he threw himself onto me, which I found out later was something he did to various attendants to test if they were paying attention. And, you know, I was on the other side of him from the banister. And so we took the first step, and then he just leaned his entire weight onto me. And I'm like, whoa. And I pushed him back with all my weight up against the banister. And he leaned completely on me again as we went down step by step. It was like playing rugby with the banister and me and Trungpa Rinpoche in between.
Cool.
He might have been having fun. You know, I was just like, I got to get this guy downstairs without us getting killed.
Oh, right. Yeah, he had I guess from his automobile accident, he had one
strong
leg that was bad. And yeah, he was crippled. I mean, he had to have he walked with a cane, all right, right?
He did, and frequently with a wheelchair as he got older. But at this point, it was just me and him, and no cane and no chair. And him in a kind of a testing mood, like, let's see if this Zen student is paying attention.
Right.
And he just turned the entire weight onto me. It's like, oh, my God. And, you know, those steps, if you remember, they're just cement. They're like polished cement, right?
Right.
And if we had tripped going down on the top of that second, you know, the lower level of them, it would have not been pretty. You know, we would have been hurt.
Yeah, I certainly understand. I go up and down pretty steep steps all the time, every day. And I like them because they're good exercise.
They are.
Yeah. My studio here is on the second floor. Nakamura Sensei was Ura Senkei, backdoor. And Mitsu Suzuki was a Mote Senkei, which is the front door.
Oh, I didn't know what those words meant. That's interesting.
Yeah, okay. Ura Senkei is the bigger school, the very prestigious one, where Jerry Fuller studied in Kyoto.
Uh-huh.
And the guy who was head of it, God, what was he called? He was like a real big shot in Kyoto. He was, like important, prestigious person.
This was at the backdoor school?
Yeah. Ura Senkei. Yeah.
And Tom Girardeau did, which one did he do?
He did Mitsu Suzuki, Omote Senkei. A lot of people did. Jeannie DePrima was a student of hers.
Yeah.
A number of people. All right, so we've got one story of Nakamura,
Trungpa. Well, there's more in the, you know.
I want to hear one about Suzuki.
There were a couple, but I mean, the one that comes to mind is the time that when I was a guest student and... my job was, together with another guy, we were supposed to paint Suzuki Roshi's closet. finished painting, Suzuki Roshi's closet in his suite. And
I was work leader. No, that's before I was work leader. Never mind.
It was Steve Weintraub. Steve Weintraub was the work leader for that project.
Yeah.
I remember very distinctly how concerned he was that we didn't.
Who was the work leader?
I think it was Steve Weintraub.
That's right. It was Steve Weintraub. He was before me.
I was
the work leader the next year.
Yeah, he had a ponytail. He had a long.
Oh, yeah. Very exacting.
Very much so. Yeah. And so.
But you're a good person to be very exacting with.
Well, you
were the best, man. I loved you when I was work leader. And because I got you labeling everything. And it wasn't like I got you to do it. It's like I let you do it. You were a calligraphy student from Reed College, right?
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah. And so a really important thing you did was the calligraphy on the boiler, it had like 20 signs on it, and it's important. Those boilers can be dangerous. It was a big thing. It was like
I'm very glad to have helped with the safety of the boiler maintenance there.
Right, the boiler in that building was as big as like a big tanker truck or something.
Not indeed,
a small tanker truck.
It was big.
So anyway, yeah. All right. I'd go to work meeting, and people would say, you're taking advantage of. This new student, David Schneider, and I'd say, I knew he was here last year too. They'd say, well, their idea was practice is sweeping or something that has, and I wanted to get things done. And all the closets, you organized and labeled stuff. Oh, God, that was so helpful.
That was fun to do. I like doing it too. That was my head was set up that way at that point.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Not like that anymore, but at that point it was.
Yeah. So hey, go back to the closets. You're painting Suzuki's closet.
Right. So I mean, this is the story about being. You know, it basically describes what it's like to be a guest student and stuff. But the point was that Suzuki Roshi was out for the day. And we got in there and painted, and Steve wanted us out by the time Roshi and Mrs. Suzuki got back. And the thing was, they came back a little early. And we had finished, and we were packing up to, get out of the closet. But what we hadn't figured out was that we had to not bring all this stuff out through his apartment. I guess over carpet or over the floor anyway. And so out of hearing from me and this, I think it was a guy called Dan that I was working with, Suzuki Roshi and Steve were having kind of a conference and Mrs. Suzuki. And then the next thing I know, Suzuki Roshi is there with a bunch of newspaper and he starts spreading out this newspaper on the floor. And he motions for me to come forward to walk, out over the newspaper through his apartment so that I didn't drip anything from my clothes or my glasses or anything I was carrying onto the rug.
Did you have shoes on?
I don't remember, but I doubt it.
Yeah.
So could have been in my, with socks. We were painting in there and it probably got on the floor and. But the main thing was that he was backing up and spreading newspaper, and I was walking forward, and the choreography of it was as if he was spreading something at my feet for me to walk over, which was literally that. But it was mortifying to have, this hero Zen master bent over in front of me while I walked forward, of course, walking through my... lack of mindfulness about having prepared, prepared an exit. And so he was kind of pointing it out and having fun with it and teaching me a lesson all at once. And I never forgot it. And so, like 40 some years later, I wrote it down.
Oh, that's cool. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. That's good. I like that. Yeah, it's a nice image.
Yeah, thank you. It's terrifying. I mean, you wouldn't want to. It was so mortifying. I really understood what mortifying meant after that.
That's great. That's great. If I'd have been painting it, I would have purposely stayed there, like for when he got back.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have been trying to get out, and Steve would have been saying, "Hey, come on, come on, what's taking you?" I was saying, "Oh, yeah, I just want to finish this."
Yeah, well, the thing was the smell too, right? I mean, you didn't want, like, because he had to live there.
Oh yeah, well that's true. Were you painting with oil base?
I don't remember.
I can tell you what we did. We did. Now I don't know about a closet. The closet might be different, but we did. Water base on walls and oil base on woodwork.
I think it was woodwork. I mean, because that's on the inside of a closet, right?
So it has walls, so the door would be oil base. But on the inside of a closet, might have cut corners. I don't know.
Yeah, I just remember there were two of us in there, and we had, and it's not big, and we had to move really carefully, and we had one of those kind of hanging light things because we had taken out the overhead lights and, taped stuff. And
yeah,
it was the most claustrophobic. We had to move so carefully and so slowly, and then coming out of there, oh my God.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So,
I mean, those are the kind of encounters with, I mean, he didn't say a word to me, but I never forgot it.
That's cool. That's cool. So I want to go back to your consumer product.
Yes.
Goods.
Yes.
Colon short stories. And it is a Cuke Press book, but it is Cuke Press DE. And DE just stands for Deutsch.
Yeah, that's how Germany abbreviates itself. Like if you want to, instead of USA for Germany, the equivalent is DE. Or like for France, it's F. Or, Spain is E, actually, for España. So just it's DE for Germany, and so it's the German. We're the German arm of Cuke Press.
yeah, that's cool. And you did it so that I didn't have to do anything. And
that was my hope to be associated but not cause you any trouble.
Well, it set a precedent, I'll tell you, because I really want to be able to help people. Have some home in a sense for the book. It's sort of a make-believe home, right? I mean, it's on Cuke.com and Cuke Press. It is the featured book. But, I mentioned it on Facebook. Hey, Neil Reuben King wrote right back and said, I just ordered it.
Thank you. Good to know.
Yeah. And I've mentioned it on What's New. I'll do so again. But I don't really promote my own stuff or that. I just keep churning stuff out and putting it online.
It's so much more interesting to do that than the promotion. I mean, I don't care much about the sales and promotion, but I have to. I should. But it feels like I don't know how many minutes I have left. And so do I want to spend them in marketing or do I want to spend them in writing?
Right. That's how I feel. I feel. Yeah, definitely.
And I really appreciate, I think my thought was, I have worked with big publishers, right? I work with Shambhala, I work with UC Press. And I just thought, whenever you work with one of those big presses, there's pluses and minuses, right? You have kind of, they'll do some stuff for you and they'll also impose some stuff on you. And I just wanted to see what it would be like to do it with friends and kind of more in my own pace and with somebody I knew and, kind of keep things under my control and work with you on it. And I'm really happy with the product. And so you know, I hope you are too. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. So far, I haven't actually seen the final product, the book itself.
Oh. People like it. My daughter likes it.
Well, I think it's got an excellent cover.
She was going to read it. I said, Lily, listen, be careful. There's, you know, it's a book for grownups. And she goes, what do you mean? And I said, well, there's some sex scenes in there. And she goes, sex scenes, Papa? Really? I'm not going to read it. I said, read it later. And she goes, okay, I'll read it later.
What, your 18-year-old daughter?
Well, I'm the father, man. Like, if it was like somebody else's daughter, I'd urge them to read it. But it's like my daughter, you know? It's like, you don't want to think about your parents in that context.
No, that's true. That's true. Your parents are not sexual beings. They're
absolutely not. It's a nauseating concept. I told her, I said, you know, it's kind of fictionalized, but she goes, still, I don't want to know, Dad.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Yeah. Well, there anything you'd like to say in conclusion?
Well, just that I'm delighted to be chatting with you about this, and you know, and I hope when I get this next gang of stories done, that I'll be able to, you know, spread them around, that there'll be some use. I mean, to me, the whole point was that I thought it was useful to talk about, like, what happens when Buddhism hits the West, right? Not from the sort of sociological point of view or the, you know, religious philosophical point of view, the changes in doctrine or sort of like the statistics about temples or that, but really sort of on the story level because, and, you know, to me, I'm a reader and literature and stories have moved me very much. And I think for some people, maybe this would be kind of a way to connect at all, or, you know, like get a feeling for like the practice world. And that was kind of my hope, you know, and there's some people who get moved by literature. There's others who really, you know, get off on philosophy or whatever. And it's all kind of spinning off of practice. So that was my hope in doing it, is that, you know, these would be little things that would be fun and maybe interesting, maybe amusing, maybe even instructive at some point. Little bits of historical fiction, sort of. So that was the hope.
Yeah. Well, good. Good.
And it continues to be.
Yeah. Well, and we haven't mentioned the book on Phil Whalen. We mentioned Street Zen. Why don't you give us the... I didn't say the name.
Philip book is Crowded by Beauty from University of California.
Does it have a subtitle?
It does. Crowded by Beauty. And then the subtitle, hang on, let me get this right, because it's kind of a tight play on words. The Life and Zen of Poet Philip Whalen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those are substantial books. Street Zen. What's the subtitle of Street Zen?
I think it's just The Life and Work of Ihssan Dorsey.
Yeah. Well, and then you were involved with the Skullcap and the Tea Bowl, or what's it called?
It's called the Teacup and the Skullcup.
Oh, yeah.
I was co-editor of that with Judy Leaf. These were Trungpa Rinpoche's two early seminars he did, I think, in 1972, 71, 72, right around then, on Zen and Tantra. So Zen being teacup and Tantra being skullcup. Skull cup is, you see it a lot in tantric iconography. The idea is that they drink out of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And So these were talks he gave as he was beginning to shift his community from being what he called, he said, we're basically, we've been practicing Zen with a sort of a tantric outlook. We've been practicing meditation. And he was beginning to move toward becoming a Vajrayana community. Mm-hmm. And so he was talking about where they were and where they were going. And they're quite amazing talks. And I had the honor, really, of being able to work with Judy Leaf on original material, go back and listen to the talks and check the transcripts and then figure out if we could make it into paragraphs. And mm-hmm. he is such a brilliant editor and a great teacher. And so it was a real honor in that they hadn't had a new person editing Trungpa Rinpoche in like 20 years, right? Very few people ever did that. And so I felt like, oh my God, I got in, you know, the door a little bit and was able to work with his original work. Mm. And I think now they're trying to sort of train some other people to do that. Carolyn Gimian and Judy Leaf have taken it upon themselves to train people to do his editing of his, because there's a lot, there's a huge amount that has never come out. It's never seen the light of day. There's just enormous amounts of material.
Right. So, right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I worked with Kaz on a book called Essential Zen.
Right. I'm in it. You took something.
You're in there. A lot of good people are in there.
Yeah. And there's something on Suzuki in the teacup in the skull cap.
There's a Trungpa Rinpoche has a essay, an appreciation at the end of Suzuki Roshi.
Yeah.
And also has a commentary on the ox herding pictures. Which is odd because, you know, or well, not odd, but it's at least, but it's interesting that a Tibetan teacher is talking about this sort of Zen teaching scheme. It made me wonder, David, if Suzuki Roshi ever commented on the ox herding pictures.
Nothing comes to mind. I have all his lectures right here in one file. I'll write ox herd. Is that, hey, I can't spell. Is that H-E-R-D?
Uh-huh, yeah. Yes.
Ox herd, no matches. All right, yeah, no, you know, but he did, and I think he called it a cow.
He did talk about the cow. Yeah, it's famous.
Something like that. But I think it'd be hard to find. There's 26 mentions of cow in his lectures.
Yeah.
Cow Palace. Right. Here's Cow Palace. No, it's I didn't search for the word cow. I searched for C-O-W. So we have scowling twice.
Oh. Funny. Well, the cow in the meadow is the you know, the very famous, I guess it's in Zen Mind Beginner's Mind, right, where giving the cow a big pasture. That's, everybody talks about that.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's where he says the way to control people is to, like you would with a cow, give them a big pasture.
Cool, yeah.
Very tolerant approach. I certainly appreciated it.
We all needed it back then.
Right, right. Okay, well, look, it's...
thank you for taking the time, David. Thank you for making this happen.
Yeah, this is great. I really enjoyed it. And I just it's fun relating with you. I haven't seen you. I saw you pretty recently, actually, 5 years ago or something in Germany.
I think it was 2016. So, yeah, that's now 5 years ago. You were at Johanneshof.
Right, right. I went there for Richard Baker's 80th birthday and the 20th anniversary of Johanneshof. And then... I stayed. I went for a month.
And I came down with the Buddhist, what was it called? The Deutsche Buddhistische Union, the German Buddhist Union, to do a program with Baker Roshi together. They didn't know, actually. They said, hey, we found this great person for you to do this program with. I said, who? They said, well, there's this guy called Baker Roshi. I said, you know, I study with him for like many years. And they said, no, you know that. So
Doris that Walter.
Doris Walter, right.
Yeah, I've been in touch with her some. Yeah, she's great.
Totally great person. Yeah.
Yeah. She's involved in a Tibetan group near Berlin, and they brought Crooked Cucumber back out in German.
Yeah, she's involved with Dzongtsar Rinpoche's. I think it's called Siddhartha's Intent, I think.
Yeah.
She's one of the main people there. She was originally with the guy who did Tibetan Book of Living.
Oh, she was for years and years with Sogyal.
Sogyal Rinpoche. And then, like many of that community, they migrated over and became students as Sogyal Rinpoche sort of disappeared. They became students of Dzongtsar Rinpoche, Dzongtsar Kempo Rinpoche. And so that's where she is now.
Yeah. So I saw you there. And, you know, that's the only time I've been out of Asia because they very kindly took care of the expenses. But
that was so much fun. It was so much fun. You remember we took long walks every day after lunch?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And caught up on old friends.
Yeah. Yeah. That was good. And you and Herr Baker and I had spent time together.
We had that funny dinner.
Yeah, we had a great dinner. Yeah, I liked it. I liked it. Okay. Well,
good. We'll keep going. We'll keep talking. We'll keep doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Very good.
Okay, David. Bye bye.
Hey, I'm going to get this podcast up Saturday night.
Cool. Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Okay.
Bye bye.
Take care. Bye bye. So thank you very much, David Schneider. Appreciate that. And, I just can't wait as soon as the stores open tomorrow to run out and get a copy of Goods, short stories. Oh, I live in Indonesia. Can't do that. Oh, there's a plane overhead. Well, that's a nice background. So just go to Amazon, write Goods, short stories, and you should find it by David Schneider. Pretty cool. Okay. So this has been a Cuke Audio podcast. I'm D.C. Puba of Cuke Audio and Cuke Archives, coming to you from sleepy Sonora with Doggett Bandita, Feline Cuchita, and dear lovely Katrinka. And we're wishing you and yours and all of us a grand awakening.